Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 18, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I have a dream.
I'm sure you have more than one dream, I hope.
It's funny because on the you know, we have our little notes here for the show, and it says Chris has a dream, and it sounds like it's a sort of an epiphany or some sort of idealistic thing or something. That's not what it means. It should have said had a dream, as in I actually had a dream of something that was pretty funny, and I can't understand why I had this dream, so I thought maybe you'd help me put your Freud hat on maybe or something and talk me through it. So you and I are at this facility and it's outdoors.
First of all, I don't like the word facility.
I know, but
I already don't like this dream.
It's already it's like,
outside? It could be a pavilion then.
It's like a pavilion. Let's say that then. It's like a pavilion. It's not completely unlike that final table of the World Series that Stu Unger won when it was outside at downtown and the wind was blowing and everything. And you and I were playing poker out there, and we were playing three-handed, and there was some guy at the table with us.
It's definitely a dream now.
I know, because why would we play three-handed? But I think we were just alone with this guy playing poker, and maybe somebody was sitting out, and they asked us, hey, do you want to keep playing? And you and I are like, yeah, you know, we didn't come all out here to this outdoor, you know, pavilion. To not play poker, you know, so let's keep playing. And we were crushing the game. I think I was up like 13,000. It was crazy the amount of money I had in front of me. And I think it was you may have said something to the effect of, yeah, we want to keep playing because, you know, this is Las Vegas. You never know who's going to sit down. And if we stop playing or end the game, we might miss our opportunity. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And like, literally as I'm saying that, over walks Johnny Chan.
Johnny Effin Chan.
But he's dressed like he was in the like 88 World Series, you know, with like the jumpsuit on and the orange in his hand. But the other thing is that he had really, really long hair and a really thick beard. And I was like,
he's got an all Eskimo Clark on.
Yeah, I'm like, Johnny, you know, what's going on here? And before he could even answer me, another player walks up and it's Doyle. But Doyle, from his World Series heyday, where he's completely bald with no hat on, and he's got those thick-rimmed black glasses. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, well, you know, you got 13,000 in front of you, and a fool and his money are soon parted, you know, and we're going to sit down and play with you guys. And I looked at you, and you looked at me, and you're like, you're crazy, man. We're not going to play with these guys. And I'm like, no, but wait a minute. If these guys are looking the way they are, it's got to be like a long time ago, so they don't know that we know how to play poker, like from the 21st century. You know, they think we're 20th century dolts, you know, and I always wondered how we would do against these guys back in the day, you know, now that we're armed with the knowledge of their books and their styles and stuff. And
yeah, and they're armed with guns from the Texas Road Gambler days.
Well, those guys are on the roof protecting the game. They don't actually have the guns themselves. But here's the weird part, like, they knew who we were.
There's a weird part coming up now?
Yeah, this is the weird part. They kind of, like, knew us. Johnny's like, man, Chris, you look so young. And I'm like, Johnny, I hope I'm young. It's like 1988, man. I'm like 18 years old. And he starts laughing at me. So we get ready to play with these guys. They sit down with, like, 20 or 30 grand. And you're like, you know, in lockdown mode. You know what I mean? You're not gambling it up. But I'm crazy. It's my dream. I got the money in front of me. And we're just about to play, and I'm just about to find out if I can hold up against these guys when Johnny's like, hey, man, you know what time it is? And I'm like, sure, hold on. So I reach into my pocket, and I pull out my iPhone, and I'm like, all of a sudden, the iPhone starts melting in my hand. And, like, it starts getting further and further
See,
away from me.
That's why I get the androids, man.
And I'm like, oh, no, this is like Christopher Reeve in that movie Somewhere in Time when he sees the penny. And it totally reminds him that he's not really in that age, and I'm not really in 1988 because I have an iPhone. How could I have an iPhone in 1988? And so I get whisked back to regular time, and I like wake up, and I'm like, no, how could I? I'm never gonna know how I would have done against these guys, and I'm just trying to figure out why I had this dream and what it means. You know, I don't get it. I don't get the whole why did my mind not want to accept the fact that I would have gotten trashed by these guys anyway? Or, you know, did I actually, you know, have the chance of beating them back then? Or probably not. Of course not. That's ridiculous. But I wanted to find out, and my mind wouldn't let me. It made me wake up. And I'm assuming that you would have gotten crushed too. I don't know. But
well, I appreciate you having my back there.
But really, I mean, it was a really it was so vivid too. I mean, these guys looked exactly like well, you know, Johnny Chan had the same outfit on, the same glasses and everything, but he had this beard and long hair, and I'm like, why? I don't understand the beard and the long hair. I've never seen you with a beard or long hair, but for some reason he had that. I don't know, maybe he was this sort of amalgamation of, you know, three or four poker players. I don't know, but clear as day, you know. Doyle looked like himself from that those old photos of him and that footage of him winning the World Series in the 70s. And I don't know, it was just a crazy
dream. He wasn't
even
the most ridiculous looking person at that final table either.
Oh no. But really, what what's the deal?
Here's what I'm going to say, Patient Cosenza. you need to quit hitting the hard stuff before you go to bed at night.
Yeah, I know, I wish that was the reason. I'd have a better constitution. I'd be healthier. But, I mean, maybe I ate something, I don't know, late at night or something. I don't know. But that was the dream. Maybe it's because the World Series has been on TV, and I've been watching a little bit of it here and there lately, just waiting for the November 9 to come up, which is coming pretty soon. And I don't know what it was, but it was a really bizarre dream. And it's not like I'm playing in a lot of poker lately. You know what I mean? We've just been doing so many different projects with the magazine and with my family and stuff. I got so much stuff on my plate that I really haven't been playing a lot of poker. So to have a poker dream randomly like that with those guys, it was so weird and so lifelike too. I gotta tell you, it was so real until I saw the iPhone.
All right, well, in all seriousness, you may not know this, and most of our listeners probably don't know this, but I am a licensed dream technician. printed off the internet last night. And so this is what I'm going to say here. I'm going to say that you are nostalgic. You've probably been, as you said, watching the World Series and probably thinking, you know what? It was so much cooler back in the day when people were smoking at the tables and they brought the money to the final table in the cardboard boxes with the overweight guards with the shotguns. And so you just wanted, your body just wanted to go back and experience what it was like back when you thought it was better than it is. Right?
Yeah.
And then obviously you're a very competitive person, which I know just drives you crazy because you really suck at everything.
Yeah.
But so you're really competitive, so you're like, you want to go back and you play, play against the best, your idols, right?
Yeah.
And I'm really surprised that Jennifer Harmon wasn't in this dream. Was that the second dream of the night or something? So that's where you're challenged there. But at the same time, you want to hold on to the cool stuff of the future. You want that iPhone. You can't give up the iPhone.
That's got to be it, man. I think my mind wanted me to wake up, though. I think it didn't want to deal with the humiliation of being trounced by these guys and losing $13,000. I don't think I could ever recover from that. I might slip into a coma or something, you know, and never wake up again. So I think my mind did a good thing. I don't know if I could have handled getting mopped up on the floor like these guys. So I don't know, but it was really it was just so random. It was so random. It wasn't like it was, you know, Tuesday at midnight falling asleep after just watching a World Series or something. It was just like a random day, random dream, and oh man, it was really bizarre. So I'm glad you helped me through it. Do I owe you some money for that analysis?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll give you one free bad beat story on the cruise next week.
All right, excellent.
And speaking of that, we are going on the cruise next week out of New York. Very excited. Lots of our podcast listeners coming on this one, so we should have a good time. We'll do our normal on the cruise ship show, but it's going to be late, so just save the whole, oh my God, the streak's over crap. for when the streak will really be over, which will be never. And we'll post that probably, what, next Monday, right, probably?
If I feel like it.
Maybe even Sunday if you get really excited that night.
We'll see.
That's just yet another in my travels around the world. And as I mentioned on last week's show, I was up in the Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh area last week. So just a couple quick notes there. Went back to Meadows and Rivers again. This is the third time I've been at both. And they both have new managers, mm-hmm. which is always very exciting, I think. And what's interesting is both of their new managers came from Las Vegas poker rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to Meadows first and then Rivers second, and it was really interesting to have that conversation with the two. Obviously, they're doing different things with their rooms, but they both are talking, coming from that Vegas vantage point, where in Vegas, as they both said, you know, the gaming commission has been around for years, right?
Yeah.
Probably even longer than your dream. And they pretty much now, you know, they kind of trust casinos to do the right thing, and their oversight is limited. You know, they've been around enough, so they know they don't need to nitpick over every little thing. They know the things that they need to have oversight of, and the other stuff they can just let them go. So, like, you know, promotions. You know, yeah. Vegas, if you want to do a promotion, you just do a promotion, right? No big deal.
Right.
Pennsylvania is one of the newest gaming commissions out there. And as we see with new gaming commissions, they want to be sure they're not taken advantage of early on. And so that's why it's so much more difficult to get things done in Pennsylvania. And now Ohio is the newest gaming commission, and they make Pennsylvania look like Vegas. So so it was really interesting to hear these two managers talk about how, you know, free they were to do things on the fly in Vegas. And now they're one of the biggest adjustments for both of them is just the hurry up and wait of Pennsylvania. And for example, at Rivers, Jim Tinney, he used to be the manager of the Rio out in Vegas. And, you know, he's got a bunch of changes coming up. He said to look for him in December. I'm quite certain he would have started them a lot earlier, but he's just waiting on the Gaming Commission to approve them all. It's just, I can only imagine how frustrating that is.
Yeah.
You know, when you got your bosses that say, hey, you know, we need profits, you got shareholders telling the bosses you need profits and all that, and you've got a plan to do it, but you're waiting on the wait, sitting around for months. Literally, it's been months to get this stuff approved and that. When everything's all right at the Rivers, Tenny said they're going to add a lot of promotions. They're going to de-emphasize the bad beat jackpot. Still going to have a bad beat jackpot, but funnel more of that player promotional fund to money that gets the money back in circulation quicker and to more people. And I'm a huge fan of that. I don't know what you are, but you know, I was reading in our proofs for our issue this issue, and there's one jurisdiction where bad beats are getting to astronomical levels, and our writer said it's mostly because quads have to be beaten.
Right.
And I'm just not a big fan of that because it just ties up that money forever.
Yeah.
And then one person hits it, they go out and buy a house. So I know Tinney knows that at the Rivers, and that's why he wants to give it back, you know, whether it's Ace is cracked or some other more innovative promotions that I know he's coming up with. It gets the money back in the circulation. And when you give somebody $100 to $200 at a time, that money goes back on the table generally.
Yeah.
So it's good for the game overall. So,
yeah.
And he's also looking to expand his Pittsburgh Poker Open brand to four events in 2014. They got the next one coming up in November and hopes to do up to four next year. So that's kind of exciting. And then a little bit south down at Meadows, Jim Ferrone's a new manager there. He used to be at the Cannery out in Vegas, one of my old-time favorites when I first started going out there. They used to have this, and I had fun talking with them. They had this $25 tournament, I think. And these days, you know, I'd rather put a Justin Bieber concert on my laptop than play a $25 tournament.
Yeah.
But back then, I thought it was awesome. You know, drive all the way out to North Vegas and play this $25 tournament. We get 500 units to start, and they probably raked $15 out of it. I didn't care, you know. He used to be there, but now he's at the Meadows. And if you're an astute reader of Annie Up, you know that the new room, the room has been moved. It used to be down on the bottom level, and now it's up on the main casino level. Overlooks the track, which I always think is great. You know, I think some of these paramutuals, some of them try to de-emphasize their paramutual ties, And I really like the ones that just make it front and center because, you know, I don't like being stuck in a room with no windows, generally.
Right.
I think it's much more enjoyable to watch, have something to see what I'm waiting for my next pocket aces to come because, you know, that's the only hand I play. So at the Meadows now, you're overlooking the track, which is really cool. And the room got a little bit smaller, as you mentioned, you know, hey, when they built the room, they didn't know what to expect. And now that the market's shaken out, they know the appropriate size table for that market, and but it's comfortable for it. It says they're at full spread on Fridays and Saturdays and working on the rest of the days, but two good rooms are in the Pittsburgh area. And then I did the venture over to Mountaineer in West Virginia. You know, it's a room, unfortunately, you know, as new rooms open, we always talk about how exciting it is. You know, mm-hmm. We talk about Maryland Live opening up, but in the same breath, what does that mean? Are other rooms going to close? And certainly Mountaineer is one that's taken as licks, probably, with both the Pittsburgh casinos opening and then the Horseshoe in Cleveland. You know, the good news at Mountaineer is their hotel is at full capacity most days. I mean, I got one of the last rooms there on a Monday, you know, not even a holiday Monday. So so they have a lot going on there. They just need to get people down to the poker room. So But that poker room is now in its fourth location, I think, and the third since I've been visiting. But right off the entrance of the casino, so at least you get some walk-by traffic. But
in its heyday, it was near the horse track, right? Didn't they say it was out by the horse pavilion?
Yeah, it started out by the horse track. We never saw that. I think the first time we saw it was in the main casino, but back in the back room, a really big room with a lot of tables. And then it sounds like everybody kind of panned that location. And then, obviously, you know, demand for the tables went down, so, you know, the two things together forced it to a different size, over down by the buffet. And what was interesting is that last time I was there, it had already moved there, so I knew where it was now. But you walked in a different way. So this time I show up, and I go to walk in where I am, and bam, slam into this, like, counter thing. And I'm like, what the heck? And they're all laughing. Hey, look at the Antioch guy. He's over here, dude. And I'm like, so I had to walk all the way around, and I'm like, But so I don't know what they're going to do next time to trip me up. But
last time we were there, you could watch me on the TV in the room when I was playing in the poker room, right? You were watching the status of the tournament or something, right?
Yeah, the tournament clock. They put it on the TV.
Yeah.
In your room, which I didn't check that this time, but
and then I wonder if my I wonder if my cousin still works there. Remember we ran into that lady who had the same last name as me or whatever.
Yes.
That was bizarre. But that's cool. So that, yeah, I mean, they seem to be doing everything they need to keep that room open. You know, it's not like they're just throwing up their hand and saying, we quit. You know, at least they're trying to keep it open, so that's good.
Yeah, I played one tournament there, and real quick story, I was just running over the table early. I haven't had that experience in a long time. I just don't know what it was. I mean, one, I was getting good hands, but two, I was getting people to calm me down with lesser hands. And really built my stack up quickly and wasn't showing a lot of hands, so I think people thought I was probably just running them over when really it wasn't for the most part. And built my stack up huge. I was probably might have been the chip leader early on. And then I get a guy all in chasing a straight draw. Hits it, of course, and boom, can't recover. So easy come, easy go in tournaments sometimes.
Oh, yeah, that's the way it goes. Well, it's good to have you back, and of course you're going back on the road. You leave tomorrow, I leave Sunday, and we'll be gone for... It's the longest cruise I think we've ever done, right? Eight days, seven nights?
Well, we did both Baltimore and New Orleans.
They were seven nights?
You weren't at one of those, yes.
No, I wasn't at those. So it's the longest one for
me.
You've ever done. Yeah.
Yes.
But looking forward to that. That should be fun. All right, so our listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline 813-448-1120. Or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the AntiUp logo version and use code AntiUp for free shipping. Okay, so this comes from Chris B., he says, I live in a small town in Nevada. There are a few casinos, but all of them are small. One had a two-table poker room, and he puts room in quotes. He said, I decided to play one evening, and after a short while, I learned that not only did everyone know each other, but the dealer was the wife of one of the players. I ended up leaving only after an hour or so and didn't make a stink about the situation. The play was slow and more like a group of buddies that I didn't belong to, and I didn't feel like paying the rake. Plus, I didn't like the whole feeling of being the sucker. Is there anything that can be done about this? In my opinion, it's ethically wrong, but as far as rules, I don't know. Is it worth getting the management involved?
Yeah, you know, I wrote back to him. This is a tough thing. This is just something that I think players, I hate to say, they have to settle for. Because you should never settle for anything. I mean, obviously, if you're upset or disappointed about something, you should make your concerns known. But there's a couple things going on here, I think. I mean, one, in Nevada, it's one of the jurisdictions where dealers can play in their own rooms. And I think we've talked about this on our show several times before. You know, the first time I saw where I was... a dealer dealt to me, and I looked down, and I looked up, and she was check-raising me.
Yeah.
What happened? So it's legal, which is one of his questions, so you're going to run into that, not just in the small rooms, but even in the bigger rooms, you'll see that. Not all rooms. I mean, some rooms decide not to let their dealers play, but it is legal for them, too. You know, I guess the other thing, a couple other things. I mean, one, I understand the defensive nature to already assume that if the dealer is a wife of another player, that there's tomfoolery going on. But until I see some evidence of it, I don't want to be the kind of person that believes that. You know?
Yeah.
I want to believe that people are honest and upright and, you know. So I would say that as well, too. And the third thing is that, you know, this is just kind of how it happens in these small locals rooms. Two tables, three tables. I mean, these are not rooms that are designed to bring in tourist traffic. Or really are not designed to bring in new traffic, as odd as that sounds. I mean, these are rooms that live and die by their regulars. And so I think, again, it's worth bringing up to management. Always bring up your concerns and let them know, hey, I might be interested in playing here, but I just don't like the buddy-buddy system going on here. But don't be surprised if they say, hey, you know, this is just the way it is. I mean, these are the people that are in here every day and paying my rake, and those are the people that I need to pay attention to. I don't think anything's going on. It's just, you know, you just got to get to know these people, and you'll be one of the insiders, and the next guy that comes in is going to lump you in with them. So I know that's frustrating if you live, as he says, in a small town with not a lot of casinos and not a good place, but you know, I think ultimately your choice is going to be, do I want to get used to this and play it and keep my eye open for things that might be weird, or just decide not to play and, you know, save up my playing time for when I can travel to a bigger place with lots of rooms and more competition.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't like to be harsh or anything, but there's nothing you can do here. There's nothing wrong here. There's nothing going on that's wrong. You mentioned that dealers can play in their rooms, but this has nothing to do with that, really. This is a wife. Now, whether or not there's a rule
that
says...
That's true, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, whether or not there's a rule that says, hey, your own family can't play in the room that you're operating in, well, that's something that maybe... But that's not going to stop the other situation that was frustrating Chris here. It was that he had a bunch of people that all knew each other. What could you possibly do about that? Hey, management, these guys know each other, so I don't want them playing in this room. I mean, they have no other choice. They live 5, you know, miles from this house or this casino in their house, and they want to play. You're going to stop people from playing with people they know? And then we can do a survey before you sit down. Hey, do you guys know each other? Or, and then,
yeah.
Oh, wait, we've reached the max of 4 people can know each other at this table, and that's it. Now we've reached 5, so now we got to break up this table and can't run a poker game. So there's really nothing that can be done. It's frustrating. But what Scott said is that you are going to have to either become one of those regulars and just join in the fun and go there all the time so you know all these players and you know how they play and it is like a home game, or you're going to have to travel. And or, well, since you live in Nevada, you can play online now. So
yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
But really, I mean, there is when he says ethically wrong, there, I don't think there are any ethics being broken here. You know, I mean, there's no reason
why.
Yeah,
not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, unless they have specific rule, you know. And the other thing, too, is these things are regulated by the Nevada Gaming Commission. They you're not going to have a wife cheating for her husband. You know what I mean? It's just not going to happen. And if it is happening, someone would find out because they're being watched all the time. And, you know, if you think a ruling went against you because of it, and then all of a sudden another ruling goes against you because of it, and you're starting to feel like something's not right, well, then you can then you can make a complaint. You can make a formal complaint to either the NGC or whatever. But in this case, really, I don't think any ethics are being broken or tainted or whatever. And then I don't think management, getting them involved, there's nothing management would do for you, because there's really nothing being done that's wrong here or that they could correct if there was. You know, I mean, I don't think there's anything you could do to people who were friends playing at the table.
Yeah, I mean, think through the conversation you're going to have before you have it. Hey, Mr. Manager, I don't like the fact that this man is playing at a table where his wife is stealing. Okay, I'm sorry, sir. Did you see something going on? Well, no, they're just married, so I don't think that's cool. Okay, well, yeah. I mean, that's how you have to think through the. I mean, if you're going to complain, you need to know how the conversation should go. I mean, it's not saying it will go that way, but, and that's really I think the thing. The other thing I'll mention, too, is this isn't really limited to these two-table small rooms, either. I mean, how many times have we walked into a 30-table room, and the 2-4 game is the same as, you know, I have the same 9 crusty guys that are there every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how it happens, you know. And I always think that's funny, because if it's the same 9 guys every day, why don't they just go to one of their homes or nursing homes and play without the rake, right? But well, whatever, you know, it's trying to chase the bad beat or something. But you're going to see this in a lot of places. So I think, again, you just got to get to decide, you know, am I comfortable breaking into this room, this table, and getting to know people and know that everybody's buddy-buddy? Or if not, then I'll just go somewhere else where I feel more comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, you know, a wife dealing the cards can't affect what happens to her husband as far as she just deals the cards. But if she was playing with him, then you could have some sort of argument, because there's collusion there that could be done and done covertly. But when she's just dealing the cards, there's really no complaint, other than she may talk to him or joke with him or something, and you might say, hey, she's wasting time. But even that's not part of this argument. So really, you just need to play online or find another room if you're uncomfortable.
All right, well, it's time for Call the Floor. If you find yourself in a situation in your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. Check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And we just got a new shipment of his new style in the mail this week. Very sexy.
Awesome.
So check those out. All right, this week comes from Crackpot One. And he says, we're in a 1-2 no-limit hold'em cash game. Player 1 pushes all in. Player 2 calls for less. Player 3 tanks. He wants to show us cards to get a reaction out of player 1, who has him covered. The floor is called. Player 3 asks whether he can show his cards. The floor says, I'd prefer you not. What kind of answer is that? Specific ruling, just his preference. Player 3 went along with the preference and didn't show, and the hand finished. Afterward, the floor explained it was because a third person in the hand. Even though players 1 and 2 were all in, the action that player 3 took could affect what happened to player 2. I understand the reasoning, but I'm not sure it's right. And I sure didn't like the I'd prefer you not answer.
Okay, Jody says, I would have probably told the player he wasn't allowed to show. It sounds like this floor person knows the reason for not wanting this player to show his hand and has a player-friendly way of expressing what should be done. I have to agree that the reason is that because the other player, you're now, if you think that, in other words, if you like the reaction, then if you call, you might beat player 2.
Right.
But if you didn't, player 1 might not be player 2. So there's a third person in the hand, you shouldn't be able to do it. And I agree. I just don't understand why the guy couldn't tell him that. Why couldn't he just say that's why?
I was going to say that Jody's answer was perfect, I thought, because I understand that lots of people prefer direct rulings, and that definitely should be the way it goes. But I do agree, Jody, that I think this was kind of a player-friendly way of just, you know, not trying to be a hard ass.
Yeah.
Floor here and just say, hey, I would really prefer if you didn't. You know, I think it. In fact, I think my answer to him before I got Jody's answer was, this might be a regionally accepted way of, because there's some parts of our country that are a little bit more polite than others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't necessarily think that the I'd prefer you not was necessarily meant to be as wishy-washy as it sounds. It might have just been respectful in that that part of the country. I don't know where this came from, so maybe I'm off base here, but and I could be wrong. Maybe he just said that. Prefer you not. I would rather not give a direct answer, but I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt that this was just kind of a way to keep the game a little friendlier. And I think if someone says I prefer you not, I would think the next step the player three would do is either do what he did and not show, or say what Crackpot said. Well, what kind of answer is that? Can I or can't I? And then at that point, it would press the floor to say, no, you cannot. So I don't think it's that big a deal. But again, I do understand the people that just prefer to get rid of the niceties and just give me a direct, straight answer.
Yeah, because the word prefer means that it's your opinion rather than what the actual rule of the house is. So I think that's what was probably ticking off Crackpot 1 here. If he could have said, you're not supposed to, or you shouldn't, or no. can I show my hand? No.
No.
I mean, what was so hard about that? No. And then if the guy says why, then he's being belligerent about it. And I already told you no, but now you're asking why. Well, now I'm going to tell you why, because you're going to hurt the third player in the hand. So, I see what you're saying. He's trying to be gentle about it. But the words, I think if anybody who really understands the words would know that prefer means it's your opinion rather than what's really the fact. So please tell me the fact. We're dealing with some money here. But I know what you're saying, and
And as much as I'm saying that, I mean, really, the best answer would have been for him to explain as he did later on, at the time, because I really the one thing that drives me crazy about floor decisions is when they come over and just give a floor decision. I think it's always every floor decision, I think, is an opportunity to educate the players on why that decision is being made, and I think that's an opportunity to prevent calls, or really, to be honest, the mistakes that lead to called floors later on. And if you could say, I mean, here, this is a perfect, hey, you cannot show because player two is all in, even though you both are all in, your play could affect him. Then I think a bunch of people go, oh, you know what, I never thought about that. And then next week or a month later, they're not going to be the player three that has to show because he heard the ruling, understands it now, and wouldn't do it. So
exactly.
That extent, I would have liked to see him expound upon it.
Yeah, that's a great point, because you're not educating anybody by saying you prefer not to.
Right.
Now everyone at the table knows the ruling now, too, so that's a good point. All right, we get to complete an O'Malley's move, always exciting. Here we go. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. There's been a lot of limping pre-flop, and we've been taking advantage of our opponent's weak play after the flop. With virtually no big pots in recent memory, we've run our stack up double. We sit with about 400. It's a full 10-handed table at this point. Under the gun folds, plus one folds, plus two calls, MP calls, MP1 calls, hijack calls, and we're in the cutoff with the six of spades, five of spades. This is exactly what we want in this situation, so we make the call. Button calls, small blind calls, big blind checks, and with $18 in the pot, we see the gorgeous nine of diamonds, eight of diamonds, seven of clubs. We really hit this one hard. It's checked to the MP1, who makes it $10 to go. Hijack folds, and it's on us. With so many to act behind us and a potentially vulnerable hand, we're not going to get cute here. We triple the bet to $30. The button calls? This player loves to see flops and set traps. He also likes to bet his draws. Luckily, he started this hand with only about 200. Thankfully, the rest of the table folds. The turn is the ace of diamonds. With $88 in the pot, we've got a decision to make. The call on our flop raise worries us a little bit, but we've got a made hand, and we're going to keep up the aggression. I think a defensive bet is in order here. We make it $40 to go, and with only a slight hesitation, our opponent shoves for his remaining $165. What are we doing in this spot?
I think this is an interesting dilemma here, and this is going to be one where I completely overthink, and you're going to say, shut up, Scott, just give me your answer. But O'Malley says his opponent likes to set traps, but he also says he likes to bet his draw. So based on that, I think he easily could have the King of Diamonds and be semi-bluffing here. But he could also have a baby flush and wants us to makes a pay in case we have the King of Diamonds. Both, I think, are equally plausible to me. So I think it's just another one of those dreaded gut check time decisions. So regardless of what he does, I could defend with a call or a fold. But the tiebreaker to me is that if we're wrong, we have no way to improve. And what's that Doyle always says? Always leave yourself an out.
Yeah.
We have no outs here if we're wrong.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it's going to hurt the fold here if we're wrong. But I think it's another reminder of why having position is so powerful. Unless I have some sort of additional read on him, I'm going to begrudgingly fold here.
You know, my recent ventures in PLO, I've been playing a lot of PLO lately. They have me thinking about the nuts all the time. And in this case, we had the ignorant end of the straight. So if you take the nuts here in Jack 10, would it be played this way? Absolutely. And by just calling, that would qualify as this player trapping, which is what we've found out this guy likes to do. So, and on top of that, he could have a diamond in that combo.
Yeah.
So even if he doesn't have the nut straight, he could have a straight with a diamond in his hand that is a fallback for him, sort of a redraw. And then also if he thinks that we do have a diamond, then he has a diamond in his hand, which is going to help his hand more because it's going to hurt our chances of making the diamond. So I think I can fold this. I really don't want to, but I'm with you. I'm going to fold. So let's see what happens.
Hello again. Could this be a situation where our opponent smells weakness and is taking advantage of it? I really doubt that's the case. He's not savvy enough for that. This seems like either a made hand or some kind of draw. If he's got something like Ace-10 with a diamond, we are still about a 68% favorite. Would he really shove a flush here? What hands are conceivable in this situation? Does Jack-10 make sense? Limping pre-flop and then calling our raise on the flop? Would he want to protect against the flush draw? We've seen him bet flush draws before tonight, but can we rule that out completely? The only problem here is he seems extremely confident, and the third diamond didn't scare him at all. I really think this is a 50-50 scenario, so to be completely honest, that's what we did. We went all Barry Greenstein on it and flipped the medallion we use as a card protector. Heads we call, tails we fold, and unfortunately for us, we call. Our opponent tables the Jack of Diamonds, 10 of Spades, for the made straight, and to add insult to injury, he powers up with a flush on the river. We're back to where we started with a mere profit of $3 for the night of hard work. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying perhaps in a 50-50 scenario, it's best to just save your money and wait for a better spot. I hope to see you on the film.
Well, I really think O'Malley's parting words are perfect here. You know, we all kind of sort of came to the conclusion that this was a 50-50 scenario, and we just had to pay more than 50-50 to find out. So when it comes to that, then fold and fight in a better spot. Lots of hands left in this tournament, or game, I'm sure, cash game. Plenty of hands on this cash game.
Yep, absolutely. And again, Jack 10 makes perfect sense, and we were basically holding a stillborn hand. It was never ahead at all in any time in this, you know, even before pre-flop. So made a lot of sense, and a fold made a lot of sense, and we made the right move. So
yeah, and I really feel bad that I missed the whole Jack 10. I mean, I saw that on your notes when I was doing it. I'm like, oh my gosh, that makes perfect sense too. So all the more reason to think that. Yeah, yet another plausible hand that puts us behind here.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, at that point, I think it's even less than a 50-50 scenario that we're ahead at that point. So, you know, play your position.
Absolutely.
All right, very excited for this hand. As folks that listened last week know, David Bloomberg sent in a hand that we had a good time talking about. And this week is going to be yet another hand with the same villain.
Cool.
So, folks that listened last week, now we have a little bit more information about how this villain plays because we dissected an entire hand, right? So, now we'll put it to work here on and see whether David puts it to work on this week's end of the week. And before we start, I'll remind everybody to send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Okay, so here's what he says. A little while later, I have Ace-8 offsuit in the cutoff with about $160. He had added on $100 after his loss, and he had won. Uh-huh. A few people limped to me, including the villain mentioned above. So we're in the cutoff with a few limpers. I don't know exactly how many, but a few. And we have Ace 8 offsuit.
Well, I mean, I'm folding the hand, so yeah. I mean, I've got to do what he's going to do. If I'm going to play it, I'm probably going to limp and hope I pop off two pair or an eight high flop or something, and really check everybody out. You know what's going on after that, but Ace 8 is just not a good hand, so I would have folded. So anything after this, I can't be held accountable for.
Yeah, I really don't even know why this is a decision at this point. You know, Ace 8 is just—it's a hand that's just going to get us in trouble, break our heart. We got some limpers in here. I mean, if we're really confident, then yeah, we could raise and just play our position. Because we're in the cutoff. It depends on what we think the button's going to do. But if I'm going to do that, then I'm going to play it strong throughout. But if not, you know, this is a cash game, right?
Yeah.
So you don't need to get cued in a cash game, particularly in a 1-2 no limit game. You know, you're going to get plenty of opportunities when you get good hands in good position or one or the other, and it will get paid off because that's just the quality of play in 1-2. I don't know why we need to get footloose and fancy free with Ace 8.
Yeah. I mean, it's not suited, they're not connecting, and aces, everybody loves aces, so you're likely going to be outkicked. If someone, you know, people could be limping with ace 10, ace jack, whatever, or behind you. You still have people behind you, so I just get out of the way with this hand, to be honest, but obviously it doesn't happen, so I'm just going to limp with it then, and hopefully someone will raise a bunch, and I'll fold and learn my lesson.
Alright, so he does decide to limp and to see what the flop brings. Does not say what happens after that, but we get an ace 9-7 rainbow, and everybody still in the hand checks to us.
Okay, well, I'd bet 2/3 of the pot just to see if I'm good. I'm not going to check it. It just gives limping hands a free shot to hit their set or their straight here, so I might as well bet 2/3 of the pot, whatever that amount is.
Yeah, this hand's changed for me now. I mean, I'm not excited about my hand, but the fact that we have multiple people in the hand that are checking this, I know some people like to, you know, lie in wait with their ace, but, you know, it's too bad. We also do have the backdoor straight draw as well, too, with it, so we get a little extra protection if we get played back yet, but they're giving me an opportunity to take the spot down, and I'm going to take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so our hero says, in this game, I figure somebody with a decent ace would have likely raised pre-flop and or bet out at this flop. Since they haven't, my 8 kicker might be the best, so I bet $10. And it folds around to the villain, and he calls. So we end up heads up with the villain.
Okay. Villain, can you tell me, where is the villain?
We do not know, I'm sorry.
All right, so
I'm going to guess that we have...
We have position on him?
Yeah, it doesn't matter at this point, because we definitely have position on him, so... I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, but it matters less now since we're heads up.
Okay.
We know he's going to have to act first. Okay, the turn is a 4. It doesn't bring any flush draws out there, so our board is ace 9-7-4, and now our villain leads out for $16.
Hmm. Well... I feel like I should call just because he might be doing one of those Johnny Chan moves where he calls then bets. And since we talked about Johnny Chan, I feel connected to him right now.
Now, is this normal Johnny Chan or is this Harry Johnny Chan?
No, this is normal Johnny Chan. I'm not sure how Harry Johnny Chan plays because I looked at my iPhone and woke up. So I don't know what he would have done. But the normal Johnny Chan does this kind of move a lot, and it's a very powerful move. But in this
case, it is actually, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's one of them I haven't thought a ton about, but I mean, it's got us confuddled right here. And I think it's the right... Maybe I'm wrong. I do think it's a pretty nice bet for that confusion, depending on what we have. I mean, for $16, I think we're probably going to call here, so maybe it's not the best move if he's trying to make a move on us. Maybe a little bit more would be better.
But. Generally, if you are playing players who are playing above their, you know, they're better than most players, they would know that you're thinking, okay, for anybody to bet into me now, they have to have a decent hand now, or we're slow playing a hand and hoping that I have ace-king, and I can't get away from this hand, or ace-something high, or, you know, whatever. So generally, when someone does this, they've improved with that turn card. Now, does that mean that they improved to a set of fours and now bet out? Probably not. They probably would have checked the set of fours there and let us bet again. But maybe ace-four, you know? Maybe they went to suited ace-four.
What's tough is that we don't know. This is where you have to think about what your opponent thinks about you. Because I could see a number of scenarios where our opponent is afraid that we're going to check behind here. That we probably, because everybody checked around, we just took a stab at it, right?
Yeah.
And now since we call, that maybe we're going to get cold feet here and just check behind, and we want to get some value out of it. So it definitely could be a set of four. So it could also be an ace, you know, that it could even be a weaker ace than we have, but he just puts us on air that we're just trying to steal the pot and doesn't want to take a chance of losing us. So that's what's kind of tough. Again, this guy is turned around position on us, and I hate that.
Yeah, it's really powerful, especially if he reads you as marginal or weak. You know, you may just lay down your hand thinking that you were being trapped. I just feel like with the amount of money that's out there and the hand that we have, I felt like if he could beat an ace, you know, he would have bet it to protect it maybe earlier since he limped, but it could be a set and he's just now hoping that we don't get away, and he's putting in his value bet like you said. So I don't know, I may call and just see what the river brings since we have position.
You know what, I probably am too. This is why I don't play 1-2 in the limit.
Yeah.
Probably very well just walking into a trap here, but $16 I think is a decent price at this point. I still got the ace. I can prove, you know, an eight comes, you know, the only two pair hand that I'm behind at that point is ace nine.
Right.
Another ace comes, then, you know, maybe it's a chop pot at that point. So for $16 I'll take another card and see how it develops. All right, well, our hero says, well, it's a bit odd, but he's a bit of an odd player. I think about it a bit and call.
Yeah, I don't mind the call. It's what's going to happen on the river that you have to be wary of, I think.
And I guess this is really where the weakness in my thinking is. I'm just going to call and see what happens on the river. I think, really, I need to press myself here, and I think we all need to press ourselves, too. If we're going to call here to have a plan for the river. I mean, we don't know what's going to come on the river. We don't know what the action's going to be, but I think we need to start thinking about what we're willing to do on the river if we make the call here. I mean, we're making the call hoping to get an eight. If that's the case, then that's probably not a good strategy, right?
Right.
There's only three of them out. It's a three-outer. It doesn't make sense. So I think our call seems to be, in my mind, and I think maybe yours as well, too, probably David's a little bit of hybrid of that we may be ahead, we may not be ahead. And I think at that point, we're probably hoping for a similar-sized bet, maybe, out of our opponent.
Yeah, because I'm playing the player too. I'm thinking that if I call, what's he thinking about my call? Is he saying, you know, if this guy was making a move because he thought we were making a move, and then we call, now he's going to think, all right, this guy must have something. He can't call here if he was making a move before. So now if he checks the river, we get to check behind and show down a nice hand. And if he bets minimal as a defensive bet, then we can just call that and see, hey, you know what, you had ace six or something. You know, who knows? So I think that the call sends some sort of message to the villain here, too, that we might be able to get some sort of value out of. So I agree with you. I think we're hoping for an 8. If we don't get an 8, we're hoping that this guy, you know, has a weaker ace or had a 9 and didn't believe us, and that he just puts out either defensive bet or checks, and we could check behind and take down a marginal size pot.
Okay, well, the river brings another 4. So our final board is ace 9-7-4-4, and our villain bets $20.
Yeah. Now our 9 means nothing. I mean, our 8 means nothing, I mean, because now we have the 9 on the board to play. So, well, the only hand that we're really losing to is a better ace or a 4. You know, a better ace than, you know, ace 9 is obviously a better ace, so...
Yeah, or set. Seven.
Yeah, or set, but I can't imagine he'd bet... Maybe he could have a full house now. I don't know. But I just don't think this guy has a full house. I don't know. I guess I would call and just see what this guy... I at this point, I want to know what he has. You know, $20 is about the same as the last bet. And the board didn't change much. If the 4 helped him last hand, then
right,
last street was already helping him.
It's
so
just injury to insult at this point.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So I guess I'd call the 20. I mean, I could have gotten away from this hand pre-flop. So
right, exactly. That's the thing. So that's, I mean, I guess, lesson, I mean, here's learned. The thing. We'll say right now, if we lose this hand, that's the lesson of the hand. It's just not to play ace eight in a 1-2 cash game. There's just no reason to ever play it.
Right.
With a lot of limpers, because it's just going to get you in a situation.
No, like no confidence at all in it.
Now, if we win, then that's a different story, but I still think that the lesson is not to, because I think we've already realized how hard the decisions were. You know, again, it comes back to, I mean, this is the best thing that Lee Childs has ever taught me, is to avoid bad situations.
Yeah.
You know, if you can avoid the bad situations, you don't have to think about them, and focus your brain power on the situations where you're in complete control, you're going to be a great player. And in this case, we've been forced into two tough decisions, right? What to do on the turn, and now what to do on the river.
Yeah.
And we could have avoided that by just not getting involved in this hand to begin with.
Yeah, but I guess I have to call 20. It's just, it seems like a bet that's just screaming for us to have to call it, and that's what's going to suck about it, is he probably has something crazy like ace-4.
Well, you know, the other thing is this is a $20 lesson bet, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I do this a couple times where I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to put the $20 in. If I lose, it's going to be my lesson that I should not have played this stupid hand, and I'm not going to do it again, and it's 20 more reasons why I shouldn't. And if I win the hand, then I'm going to be, whew, exhale, and remember never to play that hand again. And just be happy that I won some money that's going to pay for some of my other mistakes.
Yeah.
So, in a lot of ways, I don't think we can lose here. We can lose the hand here, but I don't think we can lose, if we're honest with ourselves, with whatever happens, that really should not have been in this situation.
Yeah, this is the type of hand you want to hit hard if you're going to play it. And if you don't, you got to be really cautious with it and get out of the way. So I wouldn't even play this hand, but if you didn't hit it hard, then you got to be real cautious too. So what happens?
Okay, here it says, in analyzing the hand, I still don't believe he has ace-jack or better for the reasons I mentioned on the flop. I can't imagine him having a 4, though I guess ace-4 is a small possibility. I don't think it's a small possibility. It's a possibility.
Yeah.
I don't believe he has an ace-9 or ace-7, because I think he would have bet the flop. Pretty much the only hand I'm really worried about is ace-10. I get the same bad feeling as in hand number 1 above, but I call anyway. And, of course, he has ace-10, beaten by the Cosenza.
Oh, jeez.
He says, oh, and as a postscript, the villain played poorly against everyone else in the game and managed to give my money away, his money, and another buy-in to everybody but me. Sigh.
Well, there you go. We said in the beginning of the hand that people love to play aces, and ace-10 or ace-jack is a hand that they might limp with. So, lesson learned.
You know, I think the other lesson here, too, is that I just got the sense from this last comment, maybe I'm wrong, but I got the sense that he knows that this guy is playing poorly, and we've all been at that table and we sit down and there's just some idiot there, right?
Yeah.
And then we just get psycho crazy on trying to get that guy's money before anybody else gets it, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to say psycho crazy, because that's very smart. That's how you win in poker. Is there's always going to be, you know, one or two folks that are feeding the game, but you got to be sure you know what you're doing to go after those folks. And ace eight is not a hand that I want to go after somebody like that, because it just puts you in a bad situation. Again, when you're going to get a decent hand at some point. It's just the law of averages, and that's the time that you're going to want to punish the villain. I mean, obviously at that point he might be broke and gone, somebody else has the money, but at this point you just gave him more money to give to someone else.
Yeah, cash games, there's no pressure. I mean, there's no pressure to play a hand because the blinds never go up. You know, just pick and choose your spots and expose those players when you have a better hand than that. All right, Dave, thanks for sending in those two hands. Gotta love that. And we need some more hands of the week, so everybody send them in to us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if we choose yours and we haven't chosen yours in a while, you'll get something cool for doing it. So it's worth it. It's a quid pro quo. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Loggs.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.